Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. This month we hear from retired newspaper journalist Paul Fadig, who has written up the story of his uncles and their decision not to fight in World War I. Alfred and Charlie Fadig truly headed for the hills when the United States entered the war. Paul Fadig spent 30 years collecting their story for his recently published book, Madstone. And Paul's in the studio with me once again. Good to see you, Paul.
Good morning, Jeff. It's good to be here.
So these are uncles? World War I seems like they would have been granduncles, but what's their relation to you?
Well, my grandparents got married. My grandfather was fairly early 30s when he got married to a lady who was like 16 back Midwest, and they moved out to Oregon right at the end of the 19th century, and they moved over on Weimar Street here in Ashland before they homesteaded out in the Applegate Valley. What I'm leading up to is my dad was born on Weimar Street in Ashland, June 17th, 1906. Actually, not on the street, but in the house right next to the street. So. My dad had some older brothers, and they were drafted or called up for the draft in World War I.
Okay, so your dad would have been, 11 years old when we got into World War I. Alfred and Charlie a bit older than that. And so Charlie, as you mentioned, was a lifelong bachelor, and not a fan of kids, apparently, but he was around you when you were a kid.
Right. My parents were both married before they met each other, and my dad's first wife passed away childbirth, very sadly, and my mom's first marriage didn't work out. So when my parents met, they made up for lost time by having five kids in a little over 3.5 years, including two sets of twins.
Wow.
My uncle.
That's the economy set.
Yes, yeah, yeah. They moved away and didn't leave any forwarding address. Bad joke, sorry. But our uncle Charlie lived with us on a little cabin, and we would go over to his cabin periodically when we were little kids, and he had a lot of books, even though he'd never been to school, ever, but he's self-taught. And we would look at his books until he would, after a half hour or so, he would yell at us and tell us to leave. He would use a couple of pretty good swear words. He was quite a character. He was a curmudgeon, like you say. He did not like kids.
So did he tell you stories of his not World War I experience as kids?
He did not. He didn't. He talked to adults, but he wouldn't really talk to kids much. And he died in 1967 when I was a junior in high school. When I was working up at the Anchorage Times in the 1980s, my brother Charles found out that our other uncle, Alfred, who had disappeared in 1927, was living near Dallas, Texas, a place called Denton. So I flew down there and interviewed him. My older brother accompanied me. I wrote a story for a magazine and knowing that I was going to write a book about this. And so over the years, I made a point of interviewing as many World War I vets as I could and other folks who knew about this period. And then when I retired from the Mail Tribune at the end of 2013, I wrote another book first, and then I wrote this book, which came out last April. It's called Madstone.
All right, so we need to get into what Madstone means with you, Paul Fadig.
Okay. In July of 1918, Alfred and Charlie were living in what's now the Calmiopsis Wilderness, which is a very rugged area. And they were building this cabin. Alfred crossed, and this is in the upper Chetco River drainage. He crossed the river, hiked up this little stream, and he was carrying a 4065 lever action Octagon and barrel Winchester. He saw this forked horned buck and shot it, killed it, and when he was gutting it out, he searched for a madstone, as he always did when he killed a deer. This is a stone that develops in the forestomach, otherwise known as the reticulum. It's like a pearl forming in an oyster. And I've got it right here. I could show you, but the people on the radio couldn't see it all
that
well.
We'll take a picture after the hour's up to let the people see it on Facebook.
Anyway, he shot this deer, found the Madstone. It's the only one he ever found. And so he carried the carcass back to the cabin site, and they christened the cabin when it was built, the Madstone Cabin, and they called the stream the Madstone Creek, and which you can find on the Calmeopsis Wilderness maps today.
Paul Fadig is our guest in this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. We're hearing about Paul's uncles, Alfred and Charlie, who did not choose to fight in World War I. And given the patriotic fervor whipped up by the Wilson administration, that's a bit surprising. We'll get into the reasons in just a moment. If you have questions and comments, you can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So given that swelling of patriotic fervor that was rather ubiquitous, why then? Why did Uncle Alfred, Uncle Charlie choose not to go off to World War I?
Good question. Let me set the scene a little bit. Our 26th president, Teddy Roosevelt, had said around 1900 that we should not lose our barbarian virtues, because if we do, then our civil virtues will be to no avail. And I'm guessing he was talking about we need to stay fairly close to nature and understand it and appreciate it. In 1903, Jack London's book, Call of the Wild, was published. 3 years later, London's White Fang was published. In 1912, Edgar Rice Burroughs published his book, Tarzan of the Apes. Now you see what I'm leading up to here. Mm-hmm. In 1913, a guy named Joseph Knowles was hired by the Boston Herald, I believe it was, newspaper, back in Maine to retreat into the wilderness wearing nothing but a loincloth. I try not to picture that in my mind, but anyway, and live off land for 30 days. And 1914, William Randolph Hearst, the Yale journalist, hired Knowles to do the same thing on the West Coast, and he went up behind the Oregon Caves and did the same thing. Knowles was a little bit of a con artist, and there's some evidence that people brought him groceries as well as substantial quantities of beer while he was hiding out. Or not hiding out, but
Pretending to live
on his own out there. So during this time, my grandparents and Alfred and Charlie were living out in the Applegate on their homestead. They would have known at least about the Nature Man and probably about Tarzan and the Apes and the rest. So when they were drafted, or when they were called to the military draft in after April of 1917, they, being avid hunters and fishermen at that point, elected to go back into the wilderness instead of fighting in the war. But also, their parents were members of the Church of the Brethren, otherwise known as Dunkards. Mm-hmm. Similar to the Amish and Quakers.
So very peace-oriented.
Yes, and did not believe in killing other humanoids.
But only one of the brothers was a Dunkard, right? The other one was a devout atheist, in your words?
You seem like you may have read the book.
I've touched on it a bit.
Okay. It's good to put you to sleep at night. So, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that, publisher, in case you're listening. Yes, one was a devout member of the Dunkards faith, and the other, Uncle Charlie, was an atheist. And so if you've done any camping, if you go out camping with someone and you don't get along with them very well, it's not a happy experience. So they apparently argued a lot and ended up parting ways after a while.
How far apart were they in age?
2 years difference. Okay. Charlie was born in 1890. Alfred was born in 1892.
Charlie Fadig and Alfred Fadig, the runaway uncles of Paul Fadig, who's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. You committed to writing this book apparently a very long time ago. Was it something you wanted to do upon first hearing the story?
When I was a little kid, we grew up without a television, and all I did was read. And I would hear our dad, who died when my twin and I were nine from cancer, would talk about the Madstone cabin site and that whole saga. And so I was absolutely tantalized by it, particularly as a journalist, as you well know. I've worked on 14 newspapers from Anchorage down in the Bay Area. This was the most fascinating story I've ever run across. And I've interviewed a lot of people, but they were just, I had to write a book. They were just, I couldn't get out of it.
So you mentioned that Uncle Charlie, who was not a fan of kids and shooed you out of his presence on a regular basis, was not the guy who would talk to you about the story. But you did mention flying to Texas to meet Uncle Alfred late in his life, apparently.
Right.
Just a year
right.
before he died, was it?
Yeah.
How much did he remember, and how much did he illuminate the story in ways that you hadn't known the details?
It was as though he had total recall. I mean, he was just very sharp, had a quick wit. When he was 96 when I met him, and this is the only time I knew him, met him, was for the week that we spent there in Texas. I told him, geez, Uncle Alfred, you're really in good shape. And he said, yeah, watch this. And he stood up and reached down and touched his toes without bending his knees. And I said, oh, my gosh, I can't do that now. And I was, early 30s. He said, well, maybe by the time you're 96, you'll be able to.
That was good.
Bad humor runs. It's a gene in the
family. It's a fatty thing.
Yes,
yeah,
yes, it's a terrible thing.
But he was the one who filled in all the details then that
yes.
you had been
yeah.
lacking
yeah.
up to that point. Now, yeah. I noticed that you picked up details from people other than Uncle Alfred, other people who knew about Southern Oregon and World War I. Mm-hmm. I want to hear about the significance of Osborne D. Varilla.
Wow. There's a person if I could go back in history, I would have loved to interview. He was born in Juneau and entered the Army in Grants Pass, Oregon. He was living there with his mother. And I believe he was about 18 when he entered the Army. He was trained as an artilleryman and was sent to the front. In mid-October of 1917, he fired a French 75 artillery piece about 6:30 in the morning, and that was the first shot fired by any member of the AEF, American Expeditionary Force, in World War I. He later wrote a book called The First Shot for Liberty, I believe it's called, while serving as a member of Pershing's dozen. These were basically cheerleaders who were, after they were in combat, were brought back to stateside. And he went across the United States talking to people about the war, and also wrote this book. He must have had help, I'm guessing.
But of all the shots fired in World War I, there were
that
many.
Was the
his
first
was the
one.
First fired by an American.
Yes, and you can look, you can call up his book online and read, and there's probably hard copies of it. But he went back to the war, was gassed, came back to Grants Pass, was very sick. His mom moved with him down to San Francisco, where he died when he was 22 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a terrible story
So back to the story of Uncle Alfred and Uncle Charlie hiding out in what has become in latter days the Kalmiopsis Wilderness. I mean, are there any descriptions of the cabin, any pictures of it, anything like that?
The cabin, as far as I, from what I was able to ascertain, burned to the ground around the end of World War II. There are no photos that I could find, although in the book there are a couple of photos of the site and the area where the cabin was.
So you know where it was.
I mean, yeah, I've been there. I've hiked in there twice. Mm-hmm. It is a ghastly hike.
Oh, is it really?
It's about, you go to the Babyfoot Lake trailhead, and then you hike west about 16 miles, none of which is level. It's all up or down.
Okay, so you're getting out into the wilderness and then going 16 miles from there. So they were really making sure nobody was going to come after them.
Yes, yeah.
So how did they know to come out of the woods when they did? I mean, you mentioned that they were arguing a bit, so it sounds like they'd had enough of each other and were getting some pent-up cabin fever sort of things.
In 1919, they ran into a miner while they were out hunting who told them that the war had ended. And so they went back to the cabin. Charlie eventually announced that he was going to go into the Illinois Valley area, and they had both adopted aliases. Anyway, he went there to work in the gold mines. Alford spent the rest of 1919 and into the spring of 1920 at the cabin, and he said it just he couldn't stand anymore, and he also no longer liked to hunt. He shot a bear that he said squalled like a little baby, like a kid, when he shot it, and it just made him feel horrible, and he just couldn't stand it. So anyway, he said that he hung his .40-65 rifle on the wall of the cabin when he left and just walked away.
Huh. Never to see the gun or the cabin ever again.
Yeah. And he walked into the Applegate Valley, spent a couple nights, days with his parents, and then walked into Jacksonville, where the then county courthouse was, and turned himself in. The judge there said, well, you're not within my jurisdiction. I'm not a federal court judge. And he told him to go back to the Fattig homestead while the judge sent a telegram up to the federal courthouse in Portland, and they sent some U.S. Marshals down, and they took Alford up there where he represented himself in the courtroom, which I would have loved to have seen that. I've got the transcripts from
you. Okay.
But he had only 3 months of education, and that was out in the Applegate. But he apparently represented himself fairly well because he only got 9 months in prison.
And so that was Alford, right?
That was Alford.
And did Charlie spend any time?
When Alford got out, he came down, talked his brother into giving himself up. They both took the train up to Portland. And Alford spoke on behalf of his brother. I don't know if he was acting as his attorney or what, but anyway, he got the same sentence.
All right, so 9 months. Oh, interesting. So did that treatment have anything to do with Alford's kind of disappearing off the map for many years?
I think, I know for a fact that they were somewhat ostracized by society. Mm-hmm. And I think Alford just didn't like that. And I think he also stood his ground. He probably got in a couple of altercations here and there.
All right. The story is told in the book Madstone. It's about Paul Fattig's uncles, Alfred Fattig and Charlie Fattig, who opted not to serve in World War I and hid out in the Kalmyoptis wilderness until 1919. This could have turned into one of those Japanese soldiers on an island stories, but didn't quite get to that point. Paul Fattig in this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here. You do a great job, Jeff.